So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review.
Can't figure out this blender.
It's got a switch. How the f*** does it work, man? Come on, man.
Ah, f***, you're pissing me off. Holy cow. I'm having some troubles here. I mean, I can't be this f***ing stupid. Is this a blender, you suppose? It looks like a blender.
Looks like a blender.
I can't find a switch.
How do you drive a couple of wrestlers crazy?
Yeah, I mean, who the f*** makes a blender with no switch? It just doesn't make sense, okay?
So much for juice, brother.
550 watts of power. Okay, if I could get 20 watts to work,
it's childproof.
I really appreciate your help so far.
Thanks,
yeah. You know, I need a technician.
Hey, guys, come here, watch this. It's better than TV.
Try another plug. I mean, it's got to be me. This doesn't make sense.
Welcome everyone to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting. Wei Ting is a little under the weather. He's getting some rest and relaxation, and he's going to do it by doing a podcast. How are you, Wei?
Doing okay. Yeah, I'm not feeling 100%, but still good enough to do this wonderful show.
Well, we're in the midst of an extremely busy week in the world of the Fight Network, and by extension, professional wrestling. There's so much happening. Wait, it's almost, this week kind of feels like a miniature version of like a WrestleMania week. We've got, of course, Jim Ross's show coming up on Friday. We've got Ring of Honor New Japan in town on Saturday night. And on top of that, there's a Bellator show on Friday at Casino Rama here in Ontario. And you are going to be following around welterweight champion Johnny Hendricks for a couple of days. You're going to a Dwayne Ludwig seminar. There is a lot of stuff going on this week.
There's a ton. I don't know what it is. I don't know. Maybe it's just because the weather has all of a sudden, gotten a lot better over the past week. And so that's why everybody's swarming to the city. But yeah, there's a ton that's going on, especially for us. The most unexpected of which, was just announced, I think last night, Russell Peters is coming into our studio to film an episode of Five Rounds with Robin Black and John Ramsey.
Yes, world famous comedian Russell Peters. Maybe the most well-known comedian in the world right now, I would say.
Yeah, perhaps. And a huge MMA fan.
Yes, huge boxing fan. I know he trains a lot. I've heard him many times on Joe Rogan's podcast. So that'll be really cool. Are you shooting that?
Well, I'll be one of the camera people. Yeah, it's a studio show. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I don't know how they even met. I think I saw photos of him hanging out with Robin over the week.
There was a UFC kind of event going on at the art gallery. I actually got invited to it, but I couldn't make it on the weekend, where Russell Peters was going to be there. And it's with this artist who's done all these paintings of various UFC fighters. And there was a display, and Elias Theodora was going to be there representing the UFC. And I think that's how Robin was going there along with Elias, and they connected with Russell Peters.
So does Russell Peters still actually live in Toronto?
He's got homes in all over the place. I hear he has a home in Toronto, Vancouver, LA, and I think a New York house. I think he has like four houses or something like that.
Wow. Well, he's not doing too bad then.
Yeah, we've only got one.
He's a DJ as well, apparently.
Yeah, this guy does all. I wonder what that guy gets for doing a DJ set. Just the novelty of Russell Peters coming to your club to spin, I would imagine, commands a nice buck or two.
Maybe, but I imagine he'd also, like, that probably seems like something he'd do just for free, because it's not like he needs the money, right? You know, and it seems like it's just more of a passion for him at this point.
It seems if you can get into that top tier of DJs, man, you've got it made.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Like, who would you say right now are, like, the biggest DJs out there right well, now? The, I mean, would Deadmau5 be considered a DJ? Some of these guys, they're so like against the term DJ. It's like, I don't know what you want me to call you, but yeah. You know what I mean.
Well, with electronic music, there's so many different genres of electronic music within it itself. So even though I might be kind of into a section of it, I still don't really know, you know, the grand scheme of things. But I mean, I'd imagine guys like the Tiesto, you see.
Oh, Tiesto would probably be right near the top. Yeah. Scooter, especially in Europe.
I don't even know who that is.
Oh, Scooter is, yeah, I used to love Scooter when I was really into my dance phase and. Man, great okay. group.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was talking about this with somebody over the weekend who's, and she was kind of, she's like a music student. This is Fran. This is a former classmate of ours who,
yes,
yeah, did her like PhD in, I don't know, some type of music thing. And she was just talking about how kind of the DJ has kind of taken over the live musician over the past couple of years, at least in terms of, you know, playing the big shows and commanding the most audiences.
Yeah. I mean, Girl Talk's got to be due for a new album. It was 2010
yeah.
that he put out his last one. It's almost been 4 years now, I imagine. Is there another one coming?
Yeah, I think so. I don't really know what he's been doing. Has he – he's been – I don't even know.
He hasn't been doing any talking.
No, he's been
I'm hoping he's just like locked in a warehouse somewhere, just putting together.
I heard he was like producing, maybe doing some work with other people, but we're not experts at all about any of this. So
no, we're just sharing our own thoughts.
I'm gonna go on Wikipedia and see what he's up to. Just because I know there are people listening right now who are just shouting at their iPhones, telling us exactly what's been happening.
I can't hear them. I don't care.
Okay. What's it?
I'm very insulated now. I really am kind of on this fence about getting rid of Twitter. Do you think I should? Do you think it's necessary to have like,
no,
I feel like it would be a dumb move to make to just completely divorce myself from it. But
I definitely think occasional break is very healthy. Because I think about that too. I think about deleting Facebook, deleting Twitter, just because I feel like I waste so much of my time just scrolling through people's stories that I otherwise would not care about. But you just end up getting sucked into this vortex of interesting articles and, you know, oh, what? Look at what this person had for lunch. Interesting.
See, that stuff though, like, you know, going down a rabbit hole on Twitter and like learning stuff, I think that's the positive of Twitter.
But to you me, learn about things you don't honestly wouldn't have cared for. Same with like Wikipedia, you know.
Well, that's good though. That's not a bad thing. You're diversifying your mind. Things that you never thought you would care about, now you do know. Now yeah. You know how horrible Guinness is for you, though that didn't stop you over the weekend from drinking Guinness.
No, because the thing is, yeah, I think there's important knowledge, but it's got to end somewhere, you know? Like there's a point where you just like watching TV is the same. You might find something that's very interesting, but you just end up killing all your time and you ultimately end up not doing the things that you originally set out to do with your day.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, of the people I interact with, I feel like 70% of people that go on Twitter, they go on Twitter to just get mad at other people. It's like, I'm going to piss somebody off. And it's just, it's gotten to me.
What do you mean?
Have
you been getting a lot of bad feedback?
No, it's not even like personally. It's just the overall tone. It's just, you scan through and it's just people just fucking with others. People just writing shit that is just so blatant to just try and get a reaction out of people and just saying ridiculous things. It's like, why am I bothering with this?
How willing are you? Like, how often do you unfollow people?
Quite a bit, to be honest. I do it more on Facebook than I do on Twitter. Like, I have this thing in my head where I want to get my Facebook friends down to like 100. Mm-hmm. I made the mistake of, I just added so many people before. I don't even use Facebook now for anything but to post our shows. Like, there is no personal activity.
Sounds like you need to start an alias, like a fake Facebook account.
I might. I might.
Paul Johnwick.
Yeah. Well, that's That's what some people do, like, that have actual celebrity behind them. They just have fake aliases on Twitter or Facebook. That's how they navigate with anonymity.
That's how you know you're famous, when you have, like, a fake Facebook account.
Or you have to contact friends of yours from university to take photos down because you've been instructed by, like, an agent or something that, you know, your past is gone. Yeah, that's when you know you made
it. True story. We actually know somebody like that.
So that's – not us, though. No. Has anyone ever told you a way to remove stuff from 2006?
No. I mean, I have nothing to hide.
Your days of walking into brick walls after a birthday party they're an open book for you.
Well, actually not. I do hide that from most people. So
you shouldn't. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, there isn't. I just maybe I'll want to run for mayor one day. Of this
city. That would probably be a positive, though.
Yeah, it would probably.
Man, look at this guy. This guy's awesome.
I know. Yeah, it'd probably create some scandal. I'd probably be a hit in the suburbs. No, there's a lot of stuff out there. There's some great stuff of you out there, especially on YouTube. This rap video that keeps coming up.
The fucking rap video. Yeah. I'm kind of glad it's still out there. It was a rap. That
it turns up, it turns up every like couple of years. Somebody like on some forum or something will post this John Pollock rap that I filmed for you.
And without fail, there's like a debate of like if it was me really trying to branch out into music or not. It's kind of I enjoy it because that video was done for the exact reaction that I get now, but it was designed for the reaction from like 20 people in our class and not for like prominent MMA journalists to be debating if I was trying to start a rap career. It's ridiculous. Yeah, but I was very happy with that video, to be honest with you.
I've had like colleagues come up and ask, I don't really get it. Is John serious about this rapping thing? And
what do you say?
I say, well, he's worked really hard at it. You know, he made a go of it. I don't know if he can. It's very tough to make it in this industry, of course. So, I run with it, of course. Yeah.
There was a brief time where I felt it would be really fun to write rap. I could never perform them, but to write them would be a lot of fun. I think I could do that aspect.
I thought you had some really funny lines in your song. And for people who don't know what we're talking about, just go to YouTube and type in DJ Jopo. And that's
and be amazed and know that Way was my producer.
That was I didn't really produce it. I will say though, when you originally did this rap, like I was just your editor, and I it was like one of the first things I shot. I think I didn't even do that much camera work before that. But anyway, like when you originally just gave me the elements, okay, you gave me the beat, and then you didn't even do your rap to the beat. Like you just read it.
I had no concept of you know, I have no ear for that kind of thing at all.
Like it was just like a spoken word track. I'm like, oh wow, okay, John, like don't you understand, like you got to
well, why didn't you help me back then? Why didn't you say
something? My best. I did say something and you brought it back to me, and honestly, it wasn't that much better. And so but you have your own style, you know, which is why.
Yeah, like, terrible. That was it.
No, it's great. Everybody check it out. DJ Jopo. The song is called J-O-P-O. And you should know, yo.
It's the worst rap song you'll ever hear. And I'm proud of that fact.
Well, we've all got at least something out there now. Something equally embarrassing.
You don't have anything embarrassing.
I have a rap song. What are you talking about? With Braden?
Yeah, I said embarrassing.
I thought Braden sounded great. I'm personally quite embarrassed.
Can you tell us anything? Can you give us a bit of a tease into what SummerSlam McMahon is?
Not really. I don't know.
This is a hot single that I understand might be dropping within the next few months, might even have a live performance in the city. You won't delve any further. This is going to be the new SMC.
That's right. It'll be the new acronym for SMC. No, that's just another thing that my friend and I, Elliot, are working on. And it's just not even, it's very personal. That's not even.
Well, you know what? When that song comes out, maybe we'll have Elliot on the podcast and we'll review SummerSlam 2000 and we'll drop the song at the end of the show. That'll be our debut because there is a match on that particular pay-per-view that inspired this song from our good friend Elliot Minardi, who is a longtime friend of ours.
It really did not inspire it. Like, Elliot just comes up with these, okay, what it is it's just my friend and I, we started a band and we're just like making all these songs, and he's got the funniest titles for stupid things, and it's just like just something so that we know what each recording was. And for some reason he's not even that big of a wrestling fan anymore, but like one of the memories that always stuck out was the vision of Shane McMahon falling from the Titantron at SummerSlam, and he called it SummerSlam McMahon, and it's very funny. It just stuck.
It's a hell of a visual.
Yeah, I know.
I remember as a kid seeing that for the first time, and I didn't understand how someone could possibly do that. I mean, free falling off the top of the Titantron backwards.
That is insane. Even with whatever padding they had.
I don't care what you tell me is below there. There's no way I could just drop like that, as Shane did that night in Raleigh, North Carolina.
And it's not even the only one he did. I feel like didn't he do another one?
He did one like the following year with Test, where he jumped off the Titantron, but that was more like an elbow drop. It was forward. The Steve Blackman like nasty plunge off the Titantron, that will always to me be the most frightening one, just because, my God, you almost have to have it in the back of your mind that, yeah, there's an opportunity that I could die from this and I'm okay with that.
Yeah. So, well, that's a good attitude to have with anything that you do.
But you know what? The trade-off was, I'm going to inspire someone with this spot, and it's going to create music.
Right. Okay.
SummerSlam McMahon. The build starts now. All right. Let's get into Legends House. Much less anticipated than that song. Wei, you seemed very interested when the WWE Network was first announced, and they said that Legends House would appear on the network after this thing was shot in 2012.
Yeah.
2 years ago. It was shopped around. Shockingly, nobody bid on this particular series. So it found a home on the WWE Network. And it seems that whenever we would discuss the network, inevitably you would bring up Legends House. I think you really wanted to check this show out. So I know that you went into this with a lot more excitement than I did.
Yes. Because, like I've said before, when it comes to the WWE Network, I think the draw for a lot of people is that back catalog. But for me, the biggest draw was to see what type of original programming they'd be able to come up with. And I made no secrets about being a huge fan of Total Divas, and I still am. I just think it's a great vehicle for storytelling and, a way for these otherwise people that you otherwise rarely hear from in pro wrestling to be able to see their personalities and make you connect with them. And so I kind of had my hopes high for a show like this too, Legends House, which the idea itself I can't say I was maybe that interested in, but I wasn't interested in Total Divas either when I first heard about it. But it was just more so the idea of seeing what the WWE would do with like a reality show model that's not tough enough. You know, a reality show model that features, instead of newcomers, people that we already know a little about.
Well, this series, and it appears, you know, based on the WWE conference call they held last week, that there is going to be more of this kind of original programming. They're talking about now bringing back Tough Enough, and I don't know if they're going to do another Legends House after this, but certainly people are watching this on the network.
What is that? Sorry to cut you off. What is that NXT kind of reality thing that they've got?
Yeah, I don't even know if they have episodes up any longer on the network, but it was kind of like in character, just behind the scenes videos. Oh, okay. I saw a bit of one of them, and it was nothing that really had any lasting impression on me.
Because if they bring back like Tough Enough, I feel like you could even do that with a bunch of NXT guys, you know, because it's not like we need any more newcomers. Right, you have a bunch of newcomers that aren't even on TV yet, and newcomers that could really benefit from that TV time.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the idea of that NXT kind of behind the scenes kind of profile, it could be very valuable if it's done in the right way. I mean, look at Paige. This woman needs a life raft at this point. Yeah. And I think, you know, kind of a – but that should almost be on Raw. It should be focusing on who these talents are coming in.
Yeah, sure.
But Legends House, we start off. We are going to review the first two episodes. When you said way to do the first two episodes, I remember I logged in and I said, you know what? There's three up here. Maybe I'll try and get through three of them. I knew 10 minutes into episode one, not a fucking chance was I watching three of these episodes. I got through two and I barely got through them.
Yeah, and I wondered what your reaction would be because I've actually read some reviews of this, and I feel like a lot of people are able to enjoy it. And I find myself as somebody, especially when it comes to, like, you know, more non-traditional wrestling programming that I like documentaries and all that. I usually am able to watch all those things for a long time, but like you, I had trouble getting through even these two episodes myself without falling asleep. So I please enlighten me. What do people enjoy in particular about these shows?
Well, you know, it's easy to put this in the same category as Total Divas. The difference is night and day between these two. There is good reality TV, and then there's this.
Yeah.
Where I don't know the base question here. Why are they in this house? It's just because.
Well, I'll tell you. There are different types of reality TV, of course. You know, you have like Survivor, the contest type of thing. You got, I don't know. What are some other ones?
The Biggest Loser.
Yeah, Biggest Loser.
The Real World.
Real World.
All these shows, they're built around something that they're competing for, that there's something they're working towards. This, it's like, just survive. Just live in this house and get to know your friends.
I don't know so much about The Real World, but I'll say, like, that's what this type of show is sort of based on. More so, like, the idea that we're going to put these people together in a place and they're just going to exist and go through some daily tasks. This in particular, I'd say, is probably, like, influenced more by The Surreal Life, which was basically the exact same concept with, like, C, B-level celebrities and and that was, of course, influenced by Real World as well.
And the key to that is, you know, for those kind of shows, it's the personalities that drive the bus on those kind of things. Mm-hmm. And you manufacture conflict. The biggest conflict coming out of this was Jim Duggan disagreeing with Tony Atlas about how he raises his kids and teasing that there's going to be some physical confrontation between two men that are on the back nine of their careers at this point.
There are definitely a lot of problems with these shows, even in comparison to something like A Surreal Life. And part of it, maybe the casting, you know, I have to wonder if they could have found more interesting personalities than some of the people that they chose. And also, a lot of it comes down to the production. Like you say, the amount of drama that they're able to drag out of these people, there was almost none to be found. At what points what little drama they were able to come out with, it felt like they just weren't presented very well. I didn't even understand what they were actually arguing about. It was almost like they were kind of glossing over. They definitely just could have done a better job giving a bit of exposition, but we'll get into all that.
So they show a trailer just going over highlights of the entire season, which does feature Mean Gene Okerlund crying with tears coming down. And the most overused soundbite was Gene Okerlund, who somewhere during the season yells, "Holy balls."
Yeah.
And I must have heard this soundbite 8 times between these two episodes.
I heard it, and definitely the thing that kind of stuck out, one of the only things that really stuck out from those trailers. So I guess I was at least somewhat curious what sparked that comment, what monumental scene would spark that comment, and we'd later find out.
It's set in Palm Springs, and we pretty much introduce each of the members of the house one by one, starting off with Tony Atlas, who is blown away by this house, confirming he wouldn't be able to afford this.
Apparently, this was the former house of Harpo Marx.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
Yeah, probably not this updated looking, but the shell.
Then After Atlas, we have Hillbilly Jim, who's pretty much the good-natured one of them. This guy's just in a great mood 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and great. He's very happy. Pat Patterson, who actually is probably the most interesting person. If you were to sit down and really chat with one of the people here, I think Pat Patterson would be maybe the most interesting guy. Explains he's been with the WWF since 1979. Jimmy Hart, who describes him as a pimple on prom night. He's very hard to get rid of. Howard Finkel, who the first clip they show to encapsulate who is Howard Finkel to this audience is him being shoved into a mud pit on television. Jim Duggan is then introduced. He says he's very apprehensive because there are some guys he might have trouble with and teases that he might clash with Tony Atlas. And the first big drama is that there is only one washroom in this particular mansion, and it is you have to walk by Piper and Duggan's room to get there. Gene Okerlund arrives, and then finally, the loose cannon, the rebel, Rowdy Roddy Piper, who's presented as the big curveball of the cast. How is Roddy Piper going to adapt to this house? And he comes in, and it's just pretty much playing up that this is the big question mark is Roddy Piper that they play up.
Yeah, he's presented as, you know, the loner of the group, the guy who seems the most reluctant and apprehensive to be there. And almost kind of gives off the vibe that he doesn't even want to spend a lot of time with anybody here.
Which, to me, if I'm the viewer at home, I'm then asking the question, well, why are you here then? You're not here for any cash prize. I mean, that's probably your default answer is that he's here because they're paying him to be here. But I just... as just a viewer, if I was never a wrestling fan and watched this, that would be my question for anyone complaining about being in this this habitat for however many weeks. Why? Why are you on this show?
He explains that at least in the second episode that he thinks it's his chance to erase what people have been saying about Roddy Piper all these years and to change sort of the legacy. And to that, I say, what have people been saying about
him? That's it. Like, what is... is him wandering out into the woods and howling at the moon going to change our opinion of Roddy Piper? I mean, what is this image that he's been cast under that we're not aware of? This show is going to change.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. Like, so we're almost presented like, okay, that's Roddy's motivation to be on the show. But at the same time, I don't know exactly what he's trying to fix. And that's where I feel like, you know, an interview – question could have probably helped fix that, you know, or at least some type of just a bit more exposition about what these people are here for and what's motivating them. Because I think the show makes a lot of assumptions that you would know, and even for somebody as close to pro wrestling as you and I, we don't even know what they're talking about. Like, what exactly is Roddy battling here?
Should we address the Roddy Piper interview that he recently did for Kayfabe commentaries? Because there is a direct tie-in. Like, this is involving Roddy Piper and Pat Patterson. Have you seen this?
I haven't seen it, but I heard you talk about it. So, yeah, sure. What is it?
Well, recently Kayfabe commentaries did a shoot interview with Roddy Piper going over doing their timeline series from 1984. And trailer.
And the interview was done after the show was filmed?
I assume it was done. I mean, they're just putting the trailer up now. You would think it was – I mean, Legends House was done in 2012, so you would assume this was done recently. And Roddy Piper doesn't come out and directly say it, but gives the impression that when he was 21 years old working in L.A., that Pat Patterson either propositioned him or did something. And as a result, Pat Patterson no longer likes Roddy Piper, and – it's this dark secret, but Piper doesn't come out and really explain the story. He just kind of teases that there was some kind of incident between these two when Piper was 21.
Okay, interesting. Well, what does he exactly say in this trailer?
He says that he was an attractive-looking kid at one point, and then he just kind of mumbles and kind of beats around the bush here about Pat Patterson involved with him. But doesn't say if there was actually an incident or not, or if it was just Patterson making a comment. Yeah. Patterson, I mean, it's very strange if you're going to address this story to kind of just leave it to the imagination of the viewer as to what exactly went down here. Okay. And I mean, either accuse someone or don't bring it up, kind of. I don't know. Huh. Okay. It's a very strange. You can check it out. The trailer is widely available on YouTube. It's the timeline of WWF 1984 with Roddy Piper and their host, Sean Oliver.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Is this something that was like sort of a rumor? Or a...
I had never heard this story before right. This interview.
Okay. And I mean, how much could you really gather all that much from a trailer, I guess, is my next question. Or does it show his full answer? Or
I can't tell if there's more to it. They show about 2 minutes worth. So, yeah. I mean, you do kind of get the context of it. It's not like it's a quick clip of 10 seconds where he's just addressing this.
Right, okay.
But again, it's just – it's an accusation that it doesn't really delve into with any more detail other than kind of hinting at what might or might not have happened. Hmm. So we're then introduced to the host of this show, and I use that form in the loosest sense of the word, Ashley. Ashley shows up in this red dress and a bundt cake as our first challenge for the legends is to go introduce themselves to the neighbors with their own cakes.
Yeah.
What'd you think of Ashley?
Well, she's very much your typical kind of hot chick blonde host. And I suppose she did an okay job. She did a fine job for what she had to do be there for. I guess my question was, why not get one of your own hot chick blonde generic host, but just like, it's not like they have any shortage of talented girls who can do this very same job that are dying for TV time right now, both on their main roster and within NXT. Or hell, you can even get Renee, but I'm sure she would have been too busy to commit to this. Or she wasn't
with the company.
You're right, she wasn't. But I guess that's my question, is why not give some exposure to one of your own talent, who I'm sure was also very capable and probably more knowledgeable about some of the people that are on this show.
Maybe they had big plans for Ashley. Maybe something fell apart.
Man, maybe.
Yeah, they could have, I don't know. Cody's wife, Brandy, could have used her here. We learned that Howard Finkel can speak Spanish as he gets turned away by the neighbors. Piper and Doug.
These challenges are just
so contrived, so painful.
And not interesting at all.
No! Like, I don't give a fuck about Roddy Piper and Duggan meeting a family and some little kid trolling Roddy into attacking Jim Duggan.
Well, listen, I will say that was probably the most interesting aspect of this entire thing, because this whole segment was just retired wrestlers interacting with really boring rich people that are in this gated community who say nothing and do nothing interesting. Because none of what they said made it on air, and what anything these legends had to say was not interesting either.
Yeah, if you caught all of this, we learned that Hillbilly Jim and Jimmy Hart went to someone's house where Jimmy Hart discovered what cilantro was, and Tony Atlas and Gene Okerlund were fed brownies by the least interesting neighbor in the history of this state that this was filmed in. They go back home, and our first match of the night was Roddy Piper versus a blender. How can a man work a blender? Huh. This did produce the funniest line of episode one, where Jim Duggan, seeing that Roddy was having problems with the blender, said, "So much for the juice, brother."
Was that intentional?
I don't know what it was, but I'm going to assume that it was intentional, and I'm going to get enjoyment out of whatever I can on this show. And then our biggest challenge, Way, which would be a reoccurring challenge on episodes one and two, cooking dinner. How can these men cook dinner? Uh-huh. Pat Patterson is going to make some Canadian cabbage rolls and sends them off to the grocery store, where Pat Patterson hits on the meat attendant, who was not Randy the Ram, and the butcher.
Yeah, not meat attendant.
Not to be confused with Ed Leslie either.
Okay.
Asking him if you like to play with meat. I don't think the butcher was in on it. Boy,
the drama that ensues from this segment. The cabbage is not big enough. That is the
this is the dilemma. on episode one. This is the hook to bring you in for the whole season.
Yeah, that is the inciting incident here. The cabbage is not big enough for these cabbage rolls. Yes.
My notes just take me to the next morning. What was ultimately the end here? They realized that cabbage rolls take too long to make, so we assume they just didn't eat that night and just starved. And we went right to the next morning. There was no resolution to dinner.
Yeah. Just again, maybe in the hands of more talented producers, this could have been somewhat salvaged. But
doubtful.
I feel the source material itself was probably not that great to work with. But even beyond that, I mean, presentation-wise, there's really nothing there either. There's just like a random cutaway of Jimmy Hart riding on a scooter because I guess somebody thought that would be a funny visual, and that lasts for about 10 seconds, and then we're it's just like I don't know. I don't really know who to blame because I just feel like there's really very little interesting here.
Have you ever woken up, Wei, to a gong going off in your backyard?
I have not, nor have I woken up to a dong going off in the backyard, as Tony Atlas calls it.
Tony Atlas, it's impossible to dislike this man this show.
Which is so interesting to me because he seems to be portrayed throughout the at least first two episodes as the guy who's being shunned by the rest of the group.
Did you notice his t-shirts?
He wore a Triple H shirt as he walked into the house.
Oh, because later he wore t-shirts of people's feet on them, which Tony Atlas notorious for having a foot fetish in the industry.
That's funny.
That's great.
Yeah,
they never called attention to this.
So he's like, I don't know what this was. I thought we woke up to a dong show.
Well, that would have at least been interesting. A random dong show in a backyard here in Palm Springs with the community outraged.
Oh, my.
But no, what else would it be? Gary Busey just happens to be in the backyard. Okerlund says, I heard the dong and I expected Mr. Fuji or someone from Japan to show up. But no, it was Gary Busey, Tony Atlas's hero. And refers to him as Gary Busick. Pat Patterson, to top him, has never heard of Gary Busey.
How low has this man's celebrity shrunk to be a guest on this show?
This is pretty low. It's pretty low.
What was?
I've always had a hard time telling Nick Nolte and Gary Busey apart.
Oh, me too.
Gary Busey was from Rookie of the Year, and Nick Nolte was in Blue Chips.
Yes. Yes, that's the default Nick Nolte movie, I think.
Our sports movie references to differentiate these two.
Yeah, but they look kind of similar. I also have Bill Pullman and Bill Paxton always.
Yeah. Up.
And also Michael Clark Duncan and Ving Rhames, but that's because I'm racist.
No, they look similar.
Yeah, I think so.
And they have very similar voices, too.
Mm-hmm.
So Gary Busey is going to teach the men how to meditate, involving honking sounds. Gene Okerlund concludes that Gary Busey has Tourette's syndrome, while Tony Atlas is just blown away by the knowledge of Gary Busey, who says that he subscribes to a theory called faith. Faith, adventures, and in trusting him.
Fantastic adventures in trusting him.
Oh, how did I hear this wrong? Fantastic adventures and in trusting him. That seems like you're really trying to crowbar that acronym to work. And in trusting him.
No, it's just fantastic adventures in trusting him. Faith.
F-A-I-T-H. Yeah. Oh, where did I hear? I must have been drunk at this point when I watched
it's
this.
It's okay.
You can't blame me based on the prior 40 minutes of this.
Well, it's not like Fantastic Adventures makes that much more sense either.
Okay. Well, this was not a fantastic adventure, and I trusted them that they would put together a compelling Legends House.
It almost felt to me like Busey was instructed here to play like a caricature of one of those spiritual types because that's how he came across. He came across as like this guy that it's impossible to take seriously.
Well, somehow Gary Busey then starts giving them life advice using the greatest analogy of all, his character in Lethal Weapon and how they did close-up shots and explains that when you take off the uniform, you have to leave the character in that uniform, which prompts Roddy Piper to cut down Gary Busey's gaga here and say, "Let me tell you, Gary Busey, that when I'm out in the street, I'm still that character to these fans." And Gary Busey has no response for this.
I actually thought this was probably the most interesting part of this whole discussion. Maybe this whole episode was them kind of delving into the topic of sort of the gift and the curse of being in professional wrestling. How you might get to you're expected to portray a character 24/7, whereas if you're an actor, you can get more glamour. There's more glamour to it, and at the same time, you don't. You can shed your whatever. You can shed your whatever demonic or evil or heroic character that you're playing after the movie's done. And that's something I wish they could have kind of hit more on. But I feel like just overall, you said, somehow they started talking about this, and the somehow occurs throughout this entire series, because I feel like there's such little flow to any of these segments. It's it just all kind of feels very disjointed. They just kind of go from peak moment from one topic to another without any real natural connections. And that's where I feel like more interviews, like one-on-one interviews with each of these people would probably helped. Just overall, I just didn't really like the way it flowed, and it didn't really build to much emotion as a result.
No, they just took this into discussion about WrestleMania 1. They go over some injuries, and then Gene Okerlund pops up.
You missed the other kind of dramatic incident other than the
cabbage. Of course. This is going to be the anchor for the entire series, it appears. Tony Atlas starts discussing how he works with charities and helping out young kids. And Jim Duggan comes back disagreeing with, people that don't necessarily help with other families, saying, "You've got to start by helping your own family." And he says his biggest priority is his own family. And somehow this was a disagreement. I don't even know what the disagreement was. Was this Duggan arguing that Tony Atlas shouldn't be helping other children?
Well, that's exactly what I was talking about. It's that something that as important as this was supposedly, I didn't even fully understand. Like, they would continue to reference this argument throughout the two episodes, and I still don't even know what exactly they're arguing about. It makes Duggan look like such a dick to get on Tony Atlas for doing some charity. But I'm sure there's probably more to this conversation, more to Duggan's side than what was presented here, which I thought was just presented very poorly.
Like, is he accusing Tony Atlas of being a bad father, helping other parents' children?
I have no clue. I can't really tell you. I just know that somehow this argument got really heated, and I don't really understand what they were arguing about.
Gene Okerlund pops open some vodka. Gene Okerlund is pretty entertaining on this show. I do enjoy Gene.
He's got a very sarcastic
He is just like us, but he's a part of this show, and he knows it's stupid, and he's going to have fun with it. And he announces, as I like to say, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, as he pours one back. Piper says he's quit drinking in 2009 and he's not having a great time in the house. And episode one ends with the tease that Roddy Piper in his night coat is just going to walk home to Portland. And he wanders into some weird desert and starts staring at the moon and talks about how night times are difficult for him when he closes his eyes. And maybe this would be a real compelling, complicated man with a very difficult life he leads. But it's like you're telling this story to a bunch of 5-year-olds in a playground somewhere. This is the complete wrong show, wrong character. It made no sense to
the
me.
The show actually ends with Piper howling at the moon.
Howling at the moon like he's Quentin Jackson.
Like literally howling, making howling noises. I don't know if this was put in afterwards because there just happened to be a full moon standing like right where he was. But it looked like he was physically howling. This man who was just so tormented by, I mean, I don't know. I don't even know exactly what his problem was, but he seemed to let on that he said that he was sober for a number of years before this. So he's a recovering alcoholic, I assume, correct?
Yes, I guess.
Isn't it pretty awful to trap a recovering alcoholic inside a house while all his friends are having a drinking party downstairs?
Probably not the most responsible casting.
So that's episode one.
This was terrible. I hated the show.
Yeah.
I did not want to watch episode two after this. I was ready to be done with Legends House. And I swear to God, I thought it was a joke when episode one, 43 minutes, and I click on episode two, 51.
Mm.
We just can't cram it into 43 minutes for episode two. I believe you could have done episode two in 10 minutes.
Oh, no. Oh, are you kidding me?
Nothing happened on this show.
Oh, my God.
Nothing.
Okay, let's get into episode two.
Ugh. Let's just remember, folks, that for WrestleMania 30, they capped it at a time limit because they didn't want the show to run long because it's on the network. But Legends House just let them go nuts.
I mean, there's just too much gold to trim.
Oh, we can't leave this on the table here. Boy.
I'm sure there's a full-length version of this golf cart polo match somewhere.
At one point, I wrote down on my notes, like, what the fuck am I doing? Why am I recapping this?
It's just so
guy. It's so we literally got 5 minutes on a guy how he does his hair every morning.
I actually thought that was probably the most interesting part of this. But anyway, like it's just so it's kind of amazing to me because usually we reserve this type of frustration for you know maybe like a late '90s WCW show or just something that's really like usually a bad wrestling show. And usually you know if with edited pre-produced programming or documentaries or things like that, we're a lot more lenient and it's a lot more palatable. But for some reason, this show made me way more bored than your typical bad WCW pay-per-view.
Yeah, this was episode two. We start off picking up where we left off. I had to take a full like 36-hour interval between episode one and two. I was not ready. I was originally just going to bang them off both in a row, spend 2 hours, an hour and a half watching these two. No way could I do that. I had to break up episode two into three separate sittings for 51 minutes. Piper teased leaving, but says he gave his word to stay in this house. Man of his word. He looks at this show, as Wei explained, as his last chance to clean up his reputation.
I think his reputation is pretty good, isn't it? Like, I mean, I don't know. I'm just talking about this from like a perspective of a pretty, I don't know, I would like to think well-versed wrestling fan. I mean, what's the reputation on Piper? What's he trying to clean up?
Listen, I listen to Roddy Piper when he does like interviews, and the man is incredibly engaging. And there's the cynical side of me that just I always look at Roddy Piper as though he's working. He's always on. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. And he knows how to play with people's. It was very much like Jake Roberts, where his Hall of Fame speech was incredible, but I think he knew exactly how he was. He's another one.
Oh, it's a performance.
Exactly. Sure. Exactly. He's performing.
Yeah.
And it can be heartfelt and it can be sincere, but he knows exactly what the fuck he's doing and he knows what emotion he wants to get out of you.
Yes.
And that's the exact same with Roddy Piper.
Yeah, yeah.
These guys are tremendous workers.
Okay, but at least with somebody like Jake, for instance, if he was on this show saying, you know, with Roddy Piper's supposed motivation, it would make total sense because he's somebody who's in the public eye, has not really had the best reputation over recent memory. But, I mean, Piper, I wasn't aware of anything that he needed to clean up.
So we have to go through the morning wake up where we learn that both Roddy Piper and Hillbilly Jim snore. Jimmy Hart has to play mediator between Jim Duggan and Tony Atlas as I don't really know what Jimmy Hart's role is on this show. He's just
okay. What's you know, anybody's role? I mean, I
don't know. I don't know what any of
What is Howard Finkel doing there?
He looks like he's trying to lose weight on the show. That seems to be like he's going off to camp or something. He's just wants to get some good workouts in and just have a good time.
Mm.
That's Howard's role. Duggan and Piper explain that they are both cancer survivors. They've both been married a long time, and thus they have a connection on this show together. So, what's her name? Ashley shows up and has invited them to a polo game. So every single show, we're just going to get some game for these guys to play. And the captains are Hillbilly Jim and Jim Duggan. Gene Okerlund was the last pick. Tony Atlas is scared of horses, and he's worried about dying playing polo. And he then threatens to knock his horse the fuck out. Those are his words. And the big reveal is that they will not be playing polo on actual horses, but instead on golf carts.
What a swerve. Wow.
Wow. I was anticipating seeing Roddy Piper with a guy who's gone through a hip replacement getting on top of a horse.
Yeah. Or, oh man, some of these guys who could even barely walk.
Could you imagine Howard Finkel getting on top of a horse? Howard Finkel's really big.
He is. And I suppose that would be his sort of and you know what? By the end of this episode, I did sort of relate to him a bit more because, yeah, you can. I think a lot of people can identify with somebody trying to lose weight. And that's certainly what seems to be his sort of main storyline in this show.
The only enjoyable part of this lengthy sequence of this polo game was Gene Okerlund being interviewed on camera in his golf cart, discussing how there was some cheating in this game, and says, I am disgusted at the idea of being involved with anything that could be described as contrived. I found this so hilarious. I love Gene Okerlund. Just like calling attention to this bullshit that he's part of on Legends House. It was the only highlight of this polo game.
I thought it started out fun. You know, at least this was a place where you got some trash talking. You could see some of these personalities come out. The thing is, when you tell me, oh, this show's going to have Hillbilly Jim, it's going to have Hacksaw Jim Duggan, it's going to have Roddy Piper, you think about them as their characters living in a house together. You don't think about sort of the real versions of themselves, which for better or worse are just kind of more – just very – a bit too normal for TV, you know? And that's to say not very interesting. At the very least in this game, you got some of that personality to come out, but it went way too long. This whole golf game, the polo game, it was like a 15
– Well, you know why, Wei? Because they had to fill 51 minutes and dinner became – the next 20 minutes after this. Like, my God, did they have nothing on this show?
Nothing.
Oh, my God. It ended in a shootout. And who won? The blue team? Piper's team with Duggan, sure. I think?
Yeah, the blue team, yeah. Yes.
All right. So they all have dinner at this golf course afterwards. The most painful segue where Gene Okerlund has to just play de facto host here.
At least he was making an effort trying to do something interesting, okay? Thank you, Gene, for at least, you know, using your 30, 40 years of TV production skills to at least try to drive some type of story here. At least he starts trying to get guys to talk about their first matches. And we got a bit of that. I wanted to hear more of.
Well, they're all like kind of like giggling as Gene Okerlund asks about their first match, and then we do cutaways where they're all like, yeah, we've heard these stories a million times, but why not another time? Like, they pretty much just buried their own topic of discussion. Then it was revealed that the losers of the polo match had to go shovel horse shit for about a couple of hours, and that took us to Jimmy Hart and his hair. You want to describe this way? Because this was a solid couple of minutes dedicated to Jimmy Hart and how he wakes up every morning and combs his hair.
Well, I got to say, I've always wondered about this myself. I've always wondered how he – because his hair looks – it looks like – it just looks untouchable. Like, it looks like you could do whatever you want to it. It'll always stay into that shape. Like, it doesn't even – doesn't even look like it's natural. I'm sure the color's not natural, but what I mean is, like, it just doesn't move at all. So I've always been curious every time I've seen Jimmy Hart in person. And actually, I thought this was probably the most interesting part of this show.
Boy, is that a statement.
The secret finally revealed. Because, I mean, Jimmy, you don't even usually see him without sunglasses. Like, he always seems like somebody who's very conscious about his self-image. Obviously still in pretty good shape compared to a lot of these other guys. And, you know, to have him expose his hair secret was of some interest to me.
This is my secret concoction of hairspray. He's got a secret recipe for his hairspray.
Yeah, I wonder what's in that.
I don't know. So Jimmy Hart combs his hair. And then we get a whole bit on how dumb Tony Atlas is.
Yeah.
This ate some time. We had it explained. Tony Atlas said that someone once told him if his IQ was 1 point lower, he would be considered a banana.
Uh-huh.
He says he is spontaneous like a laptop. His favorite movie was the first Frankenstein, which was not in English. And he's still wearing this t-shirt with someone's feet on them. And we just had different sequences of various house members avoiding talking to him. They have better things to do than talk with Atlas, who just rambles on and on about nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. It's the show how this guy rambles.
We got more Roddy Piper versus technology bits. He had more problems with the blender and then with the freezer and trying to put meat into the freezer, and it kept falling out.
Yeah.
So what was next? Well, we're going to go to Zumba class. Piper runs into this Zumba class and starts grabbing this woman, like puts his hands around her, and he's literally like taken away and put into a corner to stay away from these women. What?
He's very glad to see women.
He's very happy. Hillbilly Jim was sporting a Road to WrestleMania 20 t-shirt.
Yeah. Well, that's just, it's all the clothes.
Saves his shirts. He's like you.
It's all the clothes that they get. You know,
this would be a new t-shirt for you. I mean, this was only 10 years ago.
I know. One of the shows features Jimmy Hart wearing like an old WWF logo shirt, and they had the blur.
It's blurred
out.
Yeah,
he's wearing a blur on his shirt, which I thought was just funny because this was obviously something you could have controlled. But I don't know. I guess an oversight.
Gene Okerlund and Pat Patterson quit the Zumba class almost immediately, and they just sit. Finkel nearly has a heart attack, and Duggan and Atlas actually tried here during the Zumba class, and Roddy Piper informed one of the women he will never be back here for another Zumba class.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever done Zumba?
I've not, no. Yeah, again, I suppose the idea behind all this stuff is just more for the visual gag, and I don't know, maybe amusing for like 2 seconds at the most.
At best.
Yeah. I've never really had to produce reality TV or anything like that before, but I just feel like, I don't know. I feel like there's just so much more to do with these people than just these ideas that might sound interesting amongst a group of writers. But just, they don't play out very well on the TV show.
I think it's, you know, the WWE has their idea of how they want to present these legends as, you know, these goofballs and, you know, just, I think if you want to sell this outside of WWE, I think you've got to have what would be interesting is like these guys coming to grips with their careers being over. That's, or still having to work the independent circuit or separating your character.
Absolutely.
And WWE doesn't want to do that kind of
shit. Yeah, that's what I said from you know, like even before after I saw some of these trailers and I kind of expected what this show was. That's what I was just disappointed about, because I feel like the best stuff you can get out of these guys is exactly that. I mean, these people are like expert performers on the microphone talking, and they've lived through a lot of shit. Like, I want to hear them talk about the things that actually matter to them, not trying to do a Zumba class or trying to make dinner. It's just, it's obvious they don't want to do it. And as a wrestling fan, I almost find it insulting that you think I would care.
Well, you haven't seen the Chippendales episode yet, so maybe we're casting too much poor judgment
perhaps
on this series as a whole. So we go into our second consecutive episode where dinner is a big struggle. Gene Okerlund and Pat Patterson announced that they're going to prepare dinner, but Jimmy Hart senses that there's going to be problems with dinner, so he has backup food. He is going to make some a can of beans that he's going to microwave with a baked potato. And of all the incidents in the house, this is what prompts Gene Okerlund to say, holy balls, and they wonder why I drink. And then Patterson and Okerlund just give up on trying to make dinner because they can't figure out how to defrost the meat. And they leave to go play cards.
I could only imagine how miserable it was for the editor to sift through this footage and put together the best stuff and have it be this. Of everything that you shot following these people around the house for, what, three, 5 weeks, this was the best. 6 minutes on meat thawing.
And trying to work the oven, the microwave. So Piper comes out of his room starving and realizes no one's cooking dinner. The only positive of this was the t-shirt Piper was wearing. Did you catch this?
No, what was that?
It had an outline of Jesus on a cross with the text, "Killed in the line of duty." That was not blurred. And so Piper and Duggan decide, hey, let's call a restaurant and get them to bring dinner to us. Duggan loves this idea. He says, but how will we know what restaurant is closest? And then Jim Duggan discovers, hey, let's get the GPS. They have to go outside to get a signal and find the closest restaurant. Meanwhile, in the time it takes them to walk outside and get a signal, Tony Atlas starts cooking dinner himself. And lo and behold, everyone comes together to cook chicken and they all bond over dinner. And Atlas and Duggan end up burying the hatchet. They don't need to resort to delivery and everyone gets to have dinner.
Yeah.
They eat, Way. That was the resolution.
The more I think about it, the more I would assume that this was probably one of those reality shows that didn't have that much involvement, or I would say maybe scripting from the writers, because there was no story at all here. It almost felt like they're just going to roll the cameras and make a real reality show. Let's do it for real. We'll just roll the cameras and surely something interesting will happen.
Wrong.
And this really helps make a case for bullshit reality TV that's scripted beforehand, you know, that's completely fake. I got to say, I think I'd rather watch that than to watch this, because reality, especially with this show, it's really boring. There's nothing going on. No drama whatsoever. Total Divas is a million times better than this.
This is just a horrible series. I hated it. I will not be watching any more episodes of this season. I guarantee that. I give this show 0 out of 10. I don't recommend anyone even check it out for curiosity's sake. I don't think you'll enjoy it at all. I don't think there's anything redeeming about it. There's nothing that has hooked me in the slightest to ever want to watch any more of these shows.
Yeah.
What does it tell you, Wei, when at the very least you have some names on this show that people grew up with, whether you were a wrestling fan casually or intensely, you would at least know the names Roddy Piper. And what does it tell you that they shopped this thing around for 2 years and no one took a bite on this thing? Nobody.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine anyone would if they got a screener of episode one.
I really do wonder, though, what their original thinking was, because just an idea of – like what other show is there where you have a bunch of – it's basically like a geriatric house, you know? Imagine who is at all curious about what it's like to live inside a geriatric home? It seems incredibly boring. What other show is there where you get to profile basically senior citizens living in a house together? I think the concept itself probably wasn't that great. But that's not to say you couldn't have made it interesting for a wrestling fan. You know, like we talk about, I'm sure, like, you know how many people go to these wrestling conventions or go to these like roundtables, and you know, everybody's gripped by what these people have to say. Like somebody like a Jim Ross, for instance, you know, somebody who's been around the industry for a long time. When he does his Q&As, everybody is incredibly attentive. Like, he has a lot of very fun stories a lot of incredible, almost like emotional moments too, to a lot of what he has to say. But I could only imagine what they would do to Jim Ross if you put him on a show like this. You know, maybe like just barbecue jokes and then like him doing Zumba, that type of shit.
I guarantee, Wei, that you and me driving around in a car with Jim Ross for a half hour would be more entertaining than Legends House.
Yeah, I just think from concept to finish, this was just just badly done, poor ideas all around. Even just as a base reality show, like ignoring the fact that it's wrestling, ignoring the fact that, you know, it's a bunch of old people on TV – I just think it's badly produced TV. No insight, no drama, no laughs, no entertainment.
No conflict. It's just painfully manufactured conflict, if you can call it that, between Jim Duggan and Tony Atlas.
Maybe that was a problem, was that they didn't really even attempt to manufacture it enough, perhaps. Just and just the sort of the jumping from segment to segment, I felt was very forced, not very flowing. So just not a good show. I give it – I mean I don't think I can give it zero just because I feel like I've seen a lot worse. I give it maybe a 2 simply because at least there's some curiosity involved, and it kind of at least got me through the door. But to continue with it was definitely a struggle.
Yeah, it was it's also so weird because it almost appears that most of the guys in the house kind of know this show for what it is. It's kind of just – you know, maybe they just we have no idea what the direction of this show is. We're just going to go have a good time and drink and going to hang out. Whereas Roddy Piper went into this, I think, thinking it was going to be like some very intense reality show. And he was going to be this compelling character that jumps out of the screen. And instead, it just he appears just like to be on another show while watching this show. He feels completely detached.
I wish I could have seen the show that Piper had in his mind. Because that's, I think, what we'd all rather watch instead of this.
And what's most weird about this whole thing, or bizarre, is the fact that after they screened this for a bunch of the media in New York, and they brought in Duggan and they brought in Piper, all of Piper's interviews, he says he hates how he came across like a crazy man on this show. So his very motivation to go on this show appears to have been he got the exact opposite. He thinks he came across terribly on this show.
Yeah, I mean,
and he's not a big fan.
I suppose this was more edited to be comedy than, you know, anything emotional or of substance, I would say.
Well, some of you folks did endear this or endure this with us. So let's go to the feedback here on the Law message board. And we'll start off with Mookie. I was excited to see Legends House, but after the first show, it all went downhill. During the first episode, the network crashed for about 15 minutes, and I was not sure what was going on. I was not disappointed after the first episode, and after watching Piper leave while everyone decided to start drinking, made me a little more interested in who he was. There were a lot of jokes, there were a lot of gay jokes that were hinted around Pat Patterson that I thought were funny. All said, if they do another season, I would watch some original programming. I would watch, since original programming will be a plus for the network to get better. I give it 3 Roddy Piper coconuts to the skull out of 5.
Dave in Orlando, I have watched every episode so far, the first one for curiosity and the rest because my cable TV sucks on Thursday nights. I usually have the show on in the background as unfortunately it doesn't hold my attention. The fact I can't remember what happened in the first episode says a lot about this show. I did have a lot of hopes for this show and it did have potential, but the fact is Total Divas is way better produced than this show for some reason. Maybe they need better scenarios or something, but as a whole it's quite boring. Though on this week's episode they did leave a cliffhanger where they get pulled over by the cops on the way to Vegas, and on Thursday's show, they all get waxed, which should be hilarious, a la the 40-year-old virgin. Still have a glimmer of hope that it could be good. 4.5 out of 10.
Well, that's a hell of a glimmer you still have. Eric in Rochester, I was pretty excited to see episode 1 of the show, but it didn't take long to see why no network wanted to pick this up. 8 guys who seem content to just coexist and reminisce. Could have been interesting if they got into storytelling, as I'm sure each man has some great stories to tell. But the show is trying to manufacture drama that just isn't there, and their fake attempts couldn't be more obvious. The first argument is Jim Duggan and Tony Atlas arguing semantics while Gary Busey moderates. The only reason I might tune in for week 3 is to see more of Piper's kitchen incompetence. As it stands, though, the network is its own worst enemy. Why commit an hour to watching it live when I can wait less than a day for a recap to be available online and be able to immediately skip to the good parts? 3 holy balls out of 10.
Finally, Paul from the UK. This is definitely no Total Divas, but it's perfectly fine for original programming for the network. The challenges like the buggy polo and bowling have dragged, and I could have done with more of the legends just naturally interacting with each other in the house. I've never been a big Hacksaw fan, but I've really warmed to him in this. His double act with Piper has been one of the more enjoyable things on the show. Patterson ogling the deli counter server was a little creepy in 92 Phil Donahue show kind of way, and Tony Atlas's laugh can stay put in 2008. WWE CW. Question, which legends would you like to see on season two?
I can't say there won't be one, but I really don't want a season two to be around. And if this is what it's going to be, none of the names that you would think would be engaging, I want to see on this show. I don't want to see a Jim Ross on this show. I don't want to see a Jake Roberts. I don't want to see any of those guys in this goof thing. I just... Pick the jokes. Put Bob Backlund in this kind of
thing.
The
first thing that I would like to see them change in the second season is to change the producers, the writers, or whatever, because I think that's the first thing that needs to go. This is the complete wrong direction for this type of thing. And they just suck. Sorry, this show just sucks. And, you know, if you're to ask me, like, who I'm actually interested in, yeah, it's for sure. Like, to me, I want to see just put cameras in that DDP house with Scott Hall and Jake Roberts, and you got a show right there. A bunch of the other guys, I don't know. But what I actually do really want to see is them not necessarily use legends, but use and this might not be as interesting or to a mainstream audience, but I'm actually very curious to know what it's like to be a undercard guy, you know, or somebody that's a bit more current or relevant to today's I guess roster, because I feel like they'd be a lot more interesting.
Yeah, I'm curious if they do bring back Tough Enough, how it would be presented. It's very different now, because when Tough Enough first came around, I was critical with the idea of let's just start these guys from scratch, and you know they get sent to the main roster where they're just not ready for it. Whereas now you have this vehicle in NXT that if you're to do it Tough Enough and someone gets a developmental deal, that's a much easier progression for that kind of a talent.
But that's what the last Tough Enough was with Andy Levine.
Well, that is true. I don't want to see that version, though, of Tough Enough where we just had – I mean, that's kind of what you're going to get. I don't know. That's also – it's a very expensive show to put together.
Yeah.
I don't know if – like this Legends House, for all we say about it, man, they spent top dollar on this thing. I mean these are not cheap shows to produce, and you just wonder – you know, they seem to want more original content, but it's also got to make sense to be putting all this money into these original shows. And if there's – you know, is this just going to satisfy your already existing subscriber base, or are there actually new people that are going to jump on board to watch this kind of a thing?
Compared to Total Divas, I feel like this Legends House is already a big step back in terms of production value, or at least in just its ability to make good TV. Like I feel like they probably got they didn't hire the best, and I'm sorry. I feel like I'm being really harsh, but I just think this show is just that poorly done. I would have to imagine that Tough Enough, you're not going to sort of the top E network producers either.
Yeah, again, it all comes down to cost. I mean, it's you're not going to be able to get the showrunner for a major reality series to come over. So anyway, that was our look at Legends House episodes 1 and 2. If you continue to watch the series, good luck. I will not be watching anymore. Do you think you'll watch any more episodes, Wei?
I mean, if there's like a big monumental moment that everybody just has like just talks about.
Doubtful.
Maybe a Pat Patterson Roddy Piper confrontation. That might be interesting. Maybe somebody gets into a fist fight, a la Chael Sonnen and Wanderlei Silva.
That could turn things around. Yep. Yeah, Tony Atlas takes down Jim Duggan, yeah. and then Howard Finkel runs in and starts attacking.
Sucker punches him.
Atlas on top.
Yep. Gets kicked off.
All right, and they have to call up Paul Heyman to say how do we save this show?
Yeah. The ultimate reality show I want to see is the McMahon reality show. I want to see what it's like to you know, like just give me cameras and follow like Vince and Steph and Triple H and, you know, having them go to writing meetings. They'll never do that, but that's my dream.
Well, as we get on out of here, next week we are going to go back. We're going to explore some of the archives of the WWE Network, and we are going to review ECW Hardcore Heaven 2000. This was a pay-per-view event from May of 2000, and it featured Lance Storm's last match with ECW before going over to World Championship Wrestling, where he took on Just Incredible for the ECW title. Also features Rhino against the Sandman, Jerry Lynn, and Rob Van Dam. So it's been a while since we've reviewed an ECW pay-per-view, so that is going to be coming up next week. And in the meantime, you can go to liveaudiowrestling.com, catch all of our shows, including a Jim Ross, who was on the law for over an hour Sunday night, chatting Extreme Rules, his one-man show coming up Friday night in Toronto, which we will all be at, and Dave Meltzer was on the show with Jim, and lots of discussion from Monday night. Review of Raw is up, chatting Monday's show, Adam Rose's debut, lots of great stuff, and still to come this week, all of our usual shows, and you can follow Way at Way0937. I am John Pollock, and go up to prowrestlingtees.com/law and pick up a Law t-shirt. Which one are you wearing right now, Way?
I am wearing the Dan the Mouth Lavransky shirt.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's Mouth fantastic.
Motorhead shirt. Which one are you wearing?
Right now, I am wearing my favorite Eat, Sleep, Karaoke, Repeat shirt.
Awesome, man. Is that what you'll be doing tonight?
If it's Wednesday, of course. So we're going to end this show off. Is there any music that was inspired from this conversation for you, Way?
No.
Well, you know what? Then I'm going to drop some education on you, and you're going to be introduced to the man, the myth, Scooter.
Oh.
Are you ready?
That sounds legendary.
Good morning.
Doesn't do too much communicating, so you're trying to figure out what the hell he's doing.
He could crack.
Who knows what the future holds? It's just a matter of time. Oh.